Walden's Pond is here at 8 Man's Past the Hour on this 24th day of September 2000. My guest, happily, always happy to have this gentleman with us, is Professor Gary Francione of Rutgers University in Newark, New Jersey. We'll be talking about animal rights and particularly his brand new book called Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog. Professor Francione, of course, is the Nicholas D.B. Katzenbach Scholar of Law at Rutgers University in Newark, a frequent guest here on Walden's Pond, and commentator of looking at how we interact with animals and nature and other issues. And Gary?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to be with you.
Okay, how are you today?
Very well, thanks, Shelton. How are you?
Not bad. It's kind of muggy out.
Yes, it certainly is
muggy,
kind of muggy out.
Has that threat of rain forthcoming.
Yes, indeed.
Well, Gary, we want to talk about your latest venture, which is a brand new book of a subject you're, of course, very, very familiar with, the issue of animal rights. I just want to let the audience know that we'll be taking your phone calls at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900, so if you want to line up, you have questions for the professor later on in the program. Your brand new book, which we talked about briefly a few weeks ago, called Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog. And of course, you've written, you have other books out on this subject. My first question, actually, for you is, what is the difference between this book and the previous books you've written?
Well, the first book, which was about a guide for students who wanted to object to vivisection or dissection in the classroom, a book that I co-wrote with Anna Charlton, was a book devoted to that one topic. And then in 1995, I wrote Animals, Property, and the Law, which was a book that argued that animal welfare laws can't work very well because animals are property, and because animal welfare laws require that we balance the interests of animals against the interests of their owners, and that's a formula that is always going to work out in favor of the animal owners and not in favor of the animals. In 96 or 97, I forgot which, I wrote Rain Without Thunder, which the ideology of the animal rights movement, which was basically a book about my views about how the animal rights movement in the United States had, from the mid-80s to the mid-90s, basically collapsed and become a very conservative welfarist movement. This book is different from all those ventures in the sense that this is my theory of animal rights, per se, and it's directed toward a general audience. It's not directed towards lawyers, or it doesn't require that you have a deep background in either the sociology of the American animal rights movement or that you know anything about animal rights. It's intended as an introductory text for anyone from, 16 to 600 who is interested in the topic and wants to explore it. I tried very, very hard. I hope I succeeded in writing a book that is accessible to anyone who is really motivated and wants to, is interested in the topic.
Okay. Well, the subtitle of this new book is Your Child or the Dog. Very intriguing title. Why this subtitle?
Well, I've now been doing this work for about 20 years, and there are themes that sort of repeat themselves in my life and in terms of questions that people ask me. And the question I'm always asked is, if you had to kill a dog to save your child, would you do so? And I've always thought that's sort of a silly question, because the question could be rephrased: if there was one pint of blood and your child needed it and another child needed it, would you choose to give it to the other child rather than your own? And the answer is no, of course you wouldn't. And what I try to sort of focus the reader on is, look, I might very well choose to sacrifice a dog to save my child, but that doesn't mean that it's all right for us to use dogs in experiments. It doesn't mean that it's all right for us to kill cows. Similarly, I might sacrifice a human to save my child. I might say to the doctor who says, look, I've only got 2 pints of blood, and your kid needs it, and the other kid needs it. Who do I give it to? Well, I might very well say, and probably would say, if I were a normal parent, I would say, give that pint of blood to my child, and I'm very sorry about the other child, but give it to my child. That does not mean that it's all right to use the other child for biomedical experiments, for, or for any other purpose, or as forced organ donors. We have this we have this notion that, you know, if we're walking by the house, the burning house, and we and the cover of the book, Shelton, has a house that's on fire, and there's a child in one window, and there's a dog in the other, and, you know, we're always confronted with this hypothetical, well, if you're walking by the burning house and you only have time to save one being, the child or the dog, who do you save? And what I always say to people, if you're walking by the house and there's a 15-year-old and a human being and a 100-year-old human being who you know is dying of cancer anyway and will be dead, even if you rescue that person from the fire, will die within a few days of the cancer, you've only got time to save one. You run in the house, you save the adolescent. Does that mean that it's all right to use elderly people who are terminally ill in biomedical experiments or place them in circuses, zoos, or rodeos? And the answer is clearly no. But I think it's a provocative question, your child or the dog, and it helps us really focus on the confusion that that attends our thinking about the human-animal relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking about confusing, you say in the book that our culture suffers from a sort of, and I mentioned at the top of the show, moral schizophrenia when it comes to our thinking about animals. What do you mean by this?
Well, I mean, we claim to take animal interests seriously. We have all sorts of laws that say that we ought to treat them humanely. And more importantly, all of these laws and our general cultural views about animals reflect the notion that I would say the overwhelming majority of us, believe that it's wrong to inflict unnecessary pain and suffering or death on animals. Yet 99.99999% of what we do cannot be justified as necessary under any interpretation of that word. For example, let's take the example of food, which represents the largest number of animals that we use every year in this country and indeed throughout the world. I mean, we kill approximately 9 billion animals every year in this country for food, and that's 260 animals every second of every day of the year. And no one maintains that it is necessary to eat animals to lead an optimally healthy lifestyle, and indeed an increasing number of even mainstream healthcare professionals are arguing that eating meat is bad for you, and environmentalists there's unanimity from what I read in the ecological and environmental community that an animal-based agriculture is destroying the planet. It takes between 6 and 12 pounds of plant protein to produce 1 pound of flesh. It takes 100 times more water to produce a pound of meat than it does to produce a pound of wheat, etc. Now, if the prohibition against unnecessary suffering means anything at all, it means we can't justify animal pain, suffering, and death simply because it amuses us. Because if that's okay, if it's okay to breach the prohibition for our amusement, then it's a rule, then it's a prohibition that has no meaning at all. And so what I'm suggesting is the best excuse that we have for eating meat is we like the taste. It's pleasurable. We enjoy it. And if the prohibition against unnecessary suffering means anything, it means that we ought not to inflict pain, suffering, and death on animals simply because we enjoy it. There are alternatives to eating meat that are healthier for us and much better for the planet, and that would not result in that animal pain, suffering, and death. So it seems to me if we take the prohibition against unnecessary suffering seriously, we've got to start, first of all, what we're eating every day of our lives. And so I think that we are schizophrenic in the sense that, on one hand, we claim to take animal interests seriously. On the other hand, we use animals for all sorts of purposes that cannot at all be considered to be necessary in any way whatsoever. This week, I was on a radio talk show in Philadelphia, and the subject was carriage horses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, that's a problem that they're right now thinking about in Philadelphia because there's a criminal prosecution going on in Philadelphia against a couple of carriage horse stable owners.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you know very well up in New York that issue has now become a live issue again. Let me ask, in the year 2000, what necessity is there to have horses dragging people around noisy, polluted, congested cities where those horses suffer enormously, where in order to be trained they have to be conditioned to loud noises? One of the people who called in the show that I was doing in Philadelphia a couple of days ago admitted that they use guns, that they explode guns near the horses' ears, that they use all sorts of noises to get the horses used to the noise of the city streets so that the horses will basically develop a learned helplessness behavior and will simply go through the streets. I mean, we need to be asking ourselves these questions. We don't even really need, in many ways, to get the concept of animal rights into the picture in a sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do discuss the concept of rights, mm-hmm. and I do think it's an important concept, but in a sense, we don't even need to get there to eliminate 99.999% of what we're doing with animals right now, because it's not necessary at all, and the best justification we have is our pleasure, and that can't be a justification at all if the prohibition against unnecessary suffering is going to have any meaning at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gary, what do you think is the cause of this moral schizophrenia that we have regarding animals?
Well, lots of there are lots of answers to that. The simplest one I can give you is that animals are property. They're legally classified as property, and that means animals are things that we own, and that they only have the value that we give them. And going back to the argument I made in 95 in Animals, Property, and the Law, which I recast in this book, I think, in a way that's much more simple to understand for non-lawyers or non-philosophers, is simply, look, if animals are property, they're things. They don't have any value except the value that we as owners give to them. And so when we say, well, in order to determine whether we're being humane or whether animal suffering is necessary, we need to balance human interests against animal interests, what I'm suggesting is that that's a formula that can't work as long as animals are property. So the problem, the real problem is that animals are property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why on one hand we say, gee whiz, you know, we want to treat animals better, or we're concerned, you know, about the way that animals are treated. And I don't know anybody who really isn't horrified by what, you know, when they learn about the conditions in factory farms or the conditions in slaughterhouses or what goes on in laboratories or the use of animals in rodeo circuses or zoos. When they find out, they're horrified by it. And yet, nothing happens. There are no improvements in the conditions of these animals. Nothing happens. We've had these rules, these laws, for 200 years, and there are more animals being exploited in more horrific ways than ever before. And the reason for that is simple, because the animals are property. Mm-hmm. And every time we have an opportunity to examine the conflict between humans and animals, it occurs in a context where some property owner wants to do something with his or her property, and some non-property owner, some animal advocate, wants to stop that. And then what we do is we ask the courts to balance the interests of the property owner against the property. Well, again, that was like the slave laws of the 19th century. They didn't work either. There were lots of laws. As a matter of fact, there were more laws that protected slaves in this country than there are now laws that protect animals. Hmm. And those laws didn't work either, because what they required was, they required the courts to balance the interests of slave owners against their slave property, and the slave owners always won. Similarly, animal owners always win. These laws can't work. They don't work.
Well, is there a cure for this moral schizophrenia that we have for animals?
Yeah, I mean, there is, and that's to take animal interests seriously and to give some content to the prohibition against unnecessary suffering. Now, mm-hmm. how do we do that? Well, what I argue in the book is that we don't protect humans from all suffering. There's a lot of suffering in the world, and most of us are, you know, I think many of us would agree that much of it could be ameliorated, and if we in the West were not so greedy, much of it could be ameliorated. But putting that aside, it is the law of every nation in the world that we give all human beings one right, the right not to be the property of other human beings. Now, slavery still exists in some places, but it's no longer condoned. And in terms of the international community, we recognize whatever other differences we may have about what rights people have, and there's a lot of differences, we all are agreed, the international community is agreed on one thing, that every human being has the right not to be the property of other human beings. That's a basic right, that whatever other rights we're going to give you, whether we're going to give you a right to health care or a right to education or a right to attend universities or whatever, all of those rights are meaningless if you don't have the basic right not to be the property of someone else. Mm-hmm. To put it simply, mm-hmm. if I can kill you, Shelton, at my will, or if I can use you in a way that will benefit me any way that I want, then whether you have a right to vote or whether you have a right to own a car, whether you have other rights, is really sort of meaningless. And so we recognize that all human beings, however rich, however poor, however intelligent, however unintelligent, however different people are from each other, we recognize whatever their characteristics are, we recognize that all human beings have the basic right not to be treated exclusively as the means to the other, means to the ends of other human beings, that they have the right not to be regarded as the property of others. And what I'm saying is, there is a similarity between us and them that we all recognize, that is, humans and animals, and that is, we all feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
And although we don't protect human beings from all suffering, we do, at least in theory, protect all humans from suffering as a result of their use as the slaves or the property of other humans. And what I am suggesting is, unless we've got a good reason, we've got to extend that one right. Now, I'm not talking about giving animals all the same rights as humans. I'm talking about giving them one right, the right not to be property. If we don't have a good reason not to extend that right to them, then if we're going to take their interests seriously and we're not going to treat them as things that have the logical and moral status that is the same as our stereos or cars or whatever, if we're really going to take seriously the moral thinking that we claim to take seriously, then we're going to have to extend this one right to animals. But then that means that we have to abolish, not regulate, but we have to abolish those forms of animal exploitation that assume that animals are nothing but our property. So it means that we've got to stop using them for food, for entertainment, for clothing, and for a variety of other purposes.
It's 12:25 here in New York City on WBAI 99.5 FM. Shelton Walden here, your host and producer of Walden's Pond, the weekly program looking at health and environmental issues every Sunday, now at our new time, 12 noon to 1 p.m. here on WBAI. Always happy to talk with Professor Gary Francione of Rutgers University in Newark. He's the professor of law at Rutgers University in Newark, New Jersey, author of many books, including his latest, which we're discussing right now here on WBAI Live, called Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog. Oh, boy. A few more questions before our break, and then we'll take calls from our listeners at 212-209-2900. And you know, over the last year or two, it's been a flurry of interest in animal rights because, of course, you have been teaching this for many, many years. The newspapers and the media picked up on the fact that other places were discovering animal rights, other places of learning. And there were some articles and commentaries suggesting that animals will have rights and they'll be able to sue in federal court. You'll see a cow or a gorilla or a pig standing in court arguing their legal rights. What do you think about this? Do you think that
the short answer
cows
is I think it's nuts. I think it's nuts. I think that misses the whole point.
Right.
The issue is not whether the cow should have the right to sue the farmer in court. The issue is, why do we have the cow there in the first place? And see, that's the problem. I mean, you're right. I have been teaching animal rights now for a long time. I started teaching it when I was, as part of my legal philosophy course, when I was teaching at the University of Pennsylvania in 1984. So I have been doing this for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, my view of what an animal rights lawyer is very different from the prevailing conception that we have been seeing in the newspapers and the media recently. There have been a number of lawyers who are claiming that they, as lawyers, are going to be able to change the property status of animals through court cases or legislation, and I suggest that that's not going to happen. If one looks at history, which is always a good thing to do when one is trying to deal with an issue like this, the best example that we have is slavery. And it is absolutely clear that the property status of slaves did not end because a group of lawyers tried to make it end. As a matter of fact, the legal system perpetuated the system of slavery. The legal system is there to protect property rights, not abolish them, especially in a country like this where most of our constitutional principles and our constitutional theory are very firmly rooted in the notion of property rights. So what I'm suggesting is that I think it's silly to believe that we are going to get courts or legislatures to declare that animals are not property any longer. I don't think that's going to work. What I have been doing and what I do with my colleague Anna Charlton, who's an adjunct professor at Rutgers, what we do when we do, quote, animal rights law is we're representing people, students who don't want to dissect or vivisect, people who are accused of going into laboratories and removing animals, people who want to protest and have the police charging them huge taxes on their First Amendment rights through license fees, etc. We're not the real revolutionaries. When we're acting as lawyers, we're not the real revolutionaries. What we're doing is we're using the legal system to protect the rights of the real revolutionaries who are out there trying to foment what I like to call a revolution of the heart, because I'm a nonviolent person. I'm against all violence. And I believe that the legal system is never, ever going to become more progressive with respect to animals or any other disenfranchised group until the prevailing cultural sentiment changes, until we get a critical mass of people in this country who say, gee whiz, there is something really weird about the fact that I have this dog that I love and that I regard as a member of my family and that I regard as having the attributes of personhood. My dog can think. My dog has emotional reactions. My dog is a very cognitively, psychologically complex being who possesses the attributes of personhood. I love my dog and regard my dog as a member of the family, yet I'm sticking a fork into and eating an animal that is every bit as intelligent and psychologically complicated and cognitively complex as the animal that I claim to be a member of my family. So until we get sort of our sort of emotional and our cognitive notions about animals as members of our family in line with some of these other views we have, I don't think we're gonna move forward very much. And when I read that there are some lawyers who are arguing that we're gonna change the status of animals through the legal system, I have only to point them to Dred Scott, which coincidentally, people think I teach animal rights and nothing else at Rutgers, and that's false. I teach con law, criminal law, and criminal procedure, and this semester I'm teaching constitutional law, this past week I just finished teaching my students Dred Scott, which is one of the most horrifying, absolutely horrifying documents in the history, in American history. It's a 200 and some odd page opinion in which the United States Supreme Court talks about the inferiority of Negroes and how slavery is part of the natural order of things. Mm-hmm. And please, before we all say, well, that was a long time ago, it was 1857, not very long ago at all. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm suggesting is the legal system has never been a particularly good tool you don't look to the legal system to change the society in dramatic ways. That change has to come from you, from me, and from the rest of us. The law will follow. The law will not lead.
Mm-hmm. 12:31 here on WBAI in New York. Shelton Walden here on Walden's Pond, talking with professor, legal scholar at Rutgers University in Newark, New Jersey, Professor Gary Francione, author of the new book, Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog. We will take your phone calls at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900 for Professor Francione. When we come back from this musical break here on Walden's Pond on this 24th day of September in the year of our Lord, 2000. Stay with us. Back with our guest, Gary Francione, here on Walden's Pond, professor and legal scholar at Rutgers University in Newark, New Jersey, here on WBAI. Of course, we're talking about his new book, Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog. Just a couple more questions before we go on to our callers. We have a lot of industries, Gary, in our country which make traffic in and make millions of dollars, billions of dollars regarding animals. Of course,
that's for sure.
Off the top of my head, I think about the exotic birds that come in and animals that come into this country all the time from overseas, which is a scandal in itself. But of course, we have the quote unquote pet industry, animal experimentation, of course, meat industry, so many different industries which are involved in the in the trafficking and selling and use and abuse and mutilation of animals.
And see, let me just interrupt you there. Your description of these things as industries, I think, is absolutely perfect, because what you capture when you use that term is that basically animals are treated like screwdrivers or you know, any other thing that we buy in the society. They're commodities. They're economic commodities that have no value except as economic commodities. And so as a result, these things are industries, and I think that your description of them as that captures quite well the economic reality.
So what could happen? I mean, how can one foresee a day when these industries will end? I mean, under your, say, for example, under your theories, what will happen?
I'm now in my getting later 40s, and I've been doing this for a while, and I would like to think that one of the things that concerns me is that we're becoming a less humane society with respect to treating other humans. And that concerns me, and I hope that's something that we're going to turn around. But I guess I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have some hope that I believe that people basically have a spark of goodness in them, and the only issue is whether or not you can reach that and try to appeal. And again, when I talk about the issue of animal rights, I'm really talking about nonviolence. I'm talking about nonviolence towards other humans. I'm talking about nonviolence towards non-humans. Mm-hmm. So animal rights, really, or what we want to call animal rights, is really an extension of nonviolence to non-human animals. Mm-hmm. And I believe that eventually, how long it's going to take, I don't know. But I do have hope that eventually human beings with these big brains that we have will eventually recognize that violence is a bad thing, and that all forms of violence, whether violence against children or against the differently abled or against people of color or against women or against any group, including non-human animals, is just something that we should reject. And do I believe that there's a possibility that that could happen? The answer is yes. Do I see a lot of signs right now that it's happening? Well, I wish I saw more signs. But, you know, we are seeing a resurgence of social movements in different countries where people are demanding nonviolent alternatives to dispute resolution, etc. People who are opposed to American aggression, for example, who were concerned about the NATO aggression into Yugoslavia, things like that. Mm-hmm. I do think that the spark is there. The question is, can we ignite the spark? And the most important thing is that people understand. I use the term revolution a lot, and a lot of people misunderstand that to suggest that, or to attribute to me the advocating violent revolution. And the answer is, nothing could be further from the truth. It is a revolution, as I say, a revolution of the heart.
A moral revolution.
A moral revolution. A moral revolution where people say, gee, I'm not sitting down to eat. I have a choice. I can either eat a vegetable dish, which results in harm to no living being, or I can sit and I can eat a formerly living being that had a psychological and emotional, an emotionally complex disposition that is no different from the dog and the cat that I love. And why should I do that? Why should I kill this animal? Why should I be responsible for killing this animal when there's no reason for it whatsoever? And where the only justification is it tastes good. For me, that's like saying, oh, gee, I recognize rape is wrong, but once in a while it feels good to have the struggle, so therefore I will once in a while. I mean, it's the same sort of argument. I don't mean to, you know, I think it's the analogy goes that far, and I think it's a valid analogy.
Okay. Let's go to our calls here for Professor Gary Francione. We're talking with Professor Gary Francione, Nicholas D.B. Katzenbach Scholar of Law at Rutgers University in Newark. We are talking about his book, Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog. And we'll be taking your phone calls at 212-209-2900 on this edition of Walden's Pond with me, Shelton Walden, in New York. Just a reminder that at 1 p.m., stay tuned for Santiago Nieves and his program, Latino Journal. Don't tune away from the dial. One more thing before we go to the phones, Gary. How can people get a copy of the book?
Well, if they'd like to learn more about the book, yes. In about 2 days, they can hook into our website, which is www.animal-law.org, and there will be a special section, a multiple-page section, which describes each chapter of the book, and there will be more information about the book. And if they want to buy the book, which is what I would really like them to do, they can do that through Amazon.com.
Okay, Amazon.com, or go to the website www.animal-law.org. All right, 12:40 is the time. Let's move to our busy phones. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, Shelton. This is Norma.
Oh, hi, Norma. How are you?
Great, and it's so wonderful to hear you on a Sunday. Now my two favorite shows are back-to-back.
That's great. That's great.
So, and I also want to say, you know, how wonderful it is to hear your guest, because not only is he a huge intellect, but his passion to create social justice that covers the whole spectrum of what our society needs is really, really inspiring.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm so glad you called.
Thank you very much for saying that.
I have two questions.
Please.
The first question for Gary is, Gary, this is something I also think about in terms of how we turn this cruelty around. And one of the things I think about, and I wonder what your thoughts are, is do you think that part of the problem of why there is so much cruelty to animals, and that when you say people are horrified when they learn about it but nothing changes, is because human beings have been separated from nature, and that's accelerating because of the technological developments?
Absolutely. I think the answer is absolutely, and I think that the technological revolution, which we are all going through, it's funny, people who are going through revolutions, I suspect that the people who went through the Industrial Revolution were not as aware of it as we are now aware of what they were going through. And I think that we are going through a revolution right now that we are aware of on some level, but we don't really understand the implications. We're hearing about cloning and about cross-species transplants, etc. But you know what, Norma, if you don't mind my getting into something that I believe is related but directly responsive to your question, I believe that ultimately the problem is patriarchy, and I believe that what has really happened in our culture is that men have been so separated from their emotional selves. Because men run this society. I mean, this is not an equal society. This is not a society in which women have equal power with men. This is a patriarchal society in which most of the resources are held by men. Most of the job opportunities are dispensed by men. And most of the decisions that are made by men. I mean, we are now having a presidential election in the year 2000, and we have still never had a woman as president. The year is 2000. So, and women didn't get the right to vote, despite the fact that the equality of all people that was expressed in the Declaration of Independence, women didn't get the right to vote until the 20th century. So I think part of the problem is, and one of the goals that I have is to try to sort of get men more in contact with their emotional components and make it okay for men to feel emotionally about suffering, death, and pain. And that there's, you know, lots of times when I'm talking about the issue of animal exploitation, I'll have some guys say to me, well, I don't really care about animal suffering. I just love it. I know what you're saying is right, but I love the taste of the burger. And, you know, my view is that person really doesn't mean that. He's just afraid to acknowledge that he has some empathy or sympathy for the animal he's eating, because that is considered to be a non-male thing. And so part of what I'm trying to do is to try to get men in touch more with their emotional feelings and their moral feelings. Because I think that if we don't do that, I think we're in big trouble.
I think you're right. I think that there is a core inequality that the abuse of animals does flow from. So how do we turn that around? How do we get human beings more connected to the fact that we all are part of one ecosystem, and that to claim that our survival depends on eating these animals? How do we get people to no longer accept that? And the second question was, in terms of the left, many of us who are political progressives who do link and talk about animal rights, a lot of people do trivialize that and say, oh, well, you know, we should be fighting on this or that. What do you care about animals? The left has had a long history of progressives who have made these connections. Can you speak to that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there have been a lot of people going back to the 19th century. I mean, people like Henry Salt, people like George Bernard Shaw. I mean, there have been a number of people who one might classify as true left, I mean, going beyond liberalism, which I think is an odious notion in a lot of ways, but who are truly left people who have made the connections. The problem is, Norma, is that I think that the modern animal rights movement that the left is confronted with is a very bourgeois, white, middle-class a movement. And what ends up happening is you get a lot of, I can't tell you the number of times I have been in WBAI studios and have gotten involved in arguments with various WBAI progressives who are really truly fine human beings, but who see the movement as a white middle class movement that doesn't really care very much about other people. And unfortunately, I mean, we just saw that, for example, Norma, in the Rudolph Giuliani business with the milk ads. I mean, you'll find very few people on the planet who think lower of Rudolph Giuliani than do I. I believe he's destroyed New York City. But yet I think that it was horribly cruel to portray him on an anti-milk ad, making fun of the fact that he has prostate cancer. So, you know, I think that what we really do need to do is to make the left aware that, well, there's the animal rights movement out there, and this is basically, a group of people who are out there money raising and they don't really care about political issues, but there's a core of us, people like myself and people like Shelton, and it sounds like people like you, who really do view this as a movement that the left ought to take seriously. Years ago, I wrote an article with Sue Coe and Anna Charlton. Sue Coe is the very, very left-wing artist in New York City. And Sue Coe and Anna Charlton and I wrote an article about why the left ought to take animal rights seriously. But the response we got to that article from a lot of people on the left was, many people in the animal rights movement think that we ought to use prisoners for experiments rather than rats. And having been in the movement for 20 years, I've heard a lot of animal rights people say that. So I think it's a confused problem. I think part of the problem is the movement has never really put itself forward as a movement of the left. And I think that that's something that we need to do. And that's why I wrote that book in 1996, Rain Without Thunder, to urge people in the movement to see that we are not a movement, or at least as far as I'm concerned, the animal rights movement is not a movement of the center, and it's not a movement which is consistent with the right. It is a movement of the far, far left.
Thank you both for the work you do.
Thank you for your question.
Okay, thank you, Norma. All right, let's see here. We're on WBAI. We're talking with Gary Francione of Rutgers University in Newark, Shelton Walden here on Walden's Pond. Number to call is 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, I go by the name of Rags. My question is...
You go by the name of what?
Rags.
Okay.
Here's an elite raising this issue.
I'm sorry, what's that?
Here's an elite raising this issue.
Okay.
My question is, therefore, is this another issue that will divert attention from more important human suffering and American worker issues? And thank you for bringing him aboard, too,
What's that?
Tell me your name. Is it R-A-Y or...
R-A-G-S.
Oh, R-A-G-S. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. First of all, I spent the first 5 years of my life in public housing. I come from a lower middle class background. But let me say this. Even if you don't care at all about animals, we're feeding enough grain in this country every day to animals that we're going to eat. We could give two loaves of bread to every human being in the world. One of my arguments is, even if you don't care at all about animals, the fact that we in the West, all of us, and we're all responsible for this, left, right, etc., because we insist on eating meat, we are condemning many millions of people to starvation in the third world. So I don't think that my arguments about animal rights take away from concerns about human concerns or issues. I think what I'm trying to do is focus them on both the animal suffering issue and the human suffering issue. I think that there's a lot of human suffering that results as a result of the bourgeois notions of the West, that it's okay for us to consume, every time we sit down and eat a pound of steak, we're eating 12 pounds of plant protein. Even if you don't care about the cow, you got to care about the kid in the third world who's being deprived of nourishment because you are eating 12 pounds of soy.
Yeah. We're on WBAI. We're taking calls for Gary Francione at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. And let me say that, Gary, I think that this is an issue that I hope everybody will embrace, regardless of political ideology, will stop eating animals, will stop exploiting animals, will stop abusing animals. I must say my experience with people who are quote unquote on the left is that for the most part they're somewhat uninterested in this on these issues, partly because of exactly what you said, and there needs to be a change in the thinking of this. I think that and you know there needs to be a radical change in people's approach. I mean, there's been a lot of change in people's approach to this over the years, and that hopefully that people from all sides will take a look and say, look, this is a universal issue that affects everybody, and particularly affects animals. And regardless of what side of the spectrum you come on, you can stop exploiting, eating, abusing, mutilating, burning, torturing, doing anything to animals that you want to. You know, I think that we all need to come together on
well,
this
well, you
issue.
Know, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Recently I was at a conference, and a young person came up to me and said, I'm against animal experimentation. I think we should use prisoners. And I looked at this person and I said, are you aware that 70% of the prison population at the federal level consists of people of color, primarily men of color? And she said, gee, I wasn't. And I said, when you say to me, let's use prisoners, not use animals, what that says to me is, you got a race problem. And she said, gee, I wasn't even aware of the level. I said, yeah, we ought to make yourself aware of the level of racism in this country, and maybe you would be less inclined to suggest that we ought to use people in prisons rather than experimental animals, because, you know, all of these things are intertwined. I really believe all of these things are intertwined. One of the most bone-chilling things you could do is go back to the 19th century and read the justifications for slavery and then read the justifications for animal exploitation now. And I'll tell you something, they're so bone-chillingly similar that it's clear, it's absolutely clear to me. But, you know, I agree with you. I don't mean to excuse the left here say, well, gee whiz, you know, they get a pass because I think the left has an obligation to think more seriously about the issues. But unfortunately, the animal rights movement, the formal animal rights movement in this country, hasn't given the left a whole lot of, to use a speciesist expression, cud to chew on.
Right. It's true. All right, let's go to another call here. WBAI, you're on the air. For Gary Francione.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, how you doing? I'm so glad that you're on a Sunday at this hour.
Thank you. Who's this?
Michael.
Hi, Michael. Calling.
Yes, and it certainly fits in with the tone of the other noonday programs during the week with Dr. Null.
Oh, well, yes, thank you very much.
Definitely. And Dr. Francione, I've always enjoyed hearing you.
Thank you.
And I think you're certainly on the right track. I want to see if I can coincide some other things.
Please, briefly.
Yeah. There are medical doctors who, working with children with attention deficit disorder,
yes,
are able to get them off it, are able to take them off milk for a week. They calm down and then feed them milk, and right away all the symptoms come on again.
Yes, I know. I've read that, actually. Yes.
No, right. And I understand from guests that Dr. Null has had on that things like childhood schizophrenia on one end and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's on the other end can be greatly removed from the symptomatologies
as
by
a guy,
removal of meat and milk.
Now, your name is Mike.
Michael.
I, as a guy who, right before the show, finished drinking a huge glass of Gary Null's Greens and Grains, and combined with Gary Null's Red Stuff, which is what he calls it, Red Stuff. I want to tell you, they're great products. But I see, Michael. I think you're making a really good point, and that is, look, you know, it's not even a moral question about how you feel about animal suffering. It's a question about how you feel about human rights. And the fact that we get brainwashed into believing that eating rotting flesh and cow pus and the products of animals will make us, you know, what will help us. I mean, we live in a culture in which we are told that if we don't eat rotting flesh and cow pus, our limbs will fall off.
If you don't understand, a lot of people in their past lives have been maggots.
I
want to ask you.
No comment.
I'm sorry for everybody who heard me say they might be eating brunch.
Yeah.
What about the idea of getting together with these medical doctors who are finding these things and enlarging the scope, enlarging the support? And also, there's a problem.
Well, let me just say this, that there's the Organization Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.
Yes, as well as others. You know,
yeah.
But the problem, Michael, is, and I'm glad you raised it, the problem is that, you know, you got organizations out there, even including mainstream, I mean, we're not talking about radical physicians here, we're talking about a lot of mainstream men and women who are saying, hey, look, this is crazy, this stuff's not good for you, but the problem is that the meat industry next to the oil industry is the biggest industry in this country. And, you know, most of the major media sources have connections with, you know, are owned by conglomerates that have, you know, that involve pharmaceutical companies that make the antibiotics that are put in animal feeds, etc. And the message of the physicians who are trying to tell us don't eat meat, don't eat dairy, it's bad for your health, gets drowned out. And that's why I always, every time they have a pledge drive, I always send my money into BAI, because it's one of the few stations out there that hasn't been co-opted by the major conglomerates that include all these animal exploiters. So this is part of the problem. There are a lot of folks out there, Michael. Their voices are not being heard because the media doesn't want their voices to be heard, because the media has a vested economic interest in promoting the notion that if you don't go to McDonald's 20 times a week, you know, your limbs will fall off and you'll go blind.
Absolutely. Gary, as is always a rule on when you're on, we never have enough time.
You got more calls there?
Oh, we have a lot more calls, we are
I'm
coming.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. And we have to bring you back again and again, and of course, and have you just take an hour of calls, because we always have plenty of calls.
I hope to see people at the Friends of Animals
conference. Yes.
Friends of Animals is a marvelous organization.
Yes.
I hope to see that all of you there on Saturday and Sunday at the Algonquin Hotel. And if you're interested in the book, again, www.animal-law.org is our website for the project that Anna Charlton, the Animal Law Project that Anna Charlton and I have at Rutgers. That there will be a separate, as of Tuesday, there will be a separate set of pages about the book, discussing the book, and you can get the book from Amazon.com.
Okay. All right, Gary. Listen, as always, it's always a pleasure to have
Sheldon,
you on.
Sheldon, it's an honor to be on your show, and I respect the work you do enormously.
Well, thank you, and it's an honor to have you on the program as well. Gary Francione, my guest. Gary, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sheldon.
Okay.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Gary Francione, he's the Nicholas D.B. Katzenbach Scholar of Law at Rutgers University at Newark, New Jersey. Longtime scholar, legal scholar on animals. He has a new book called Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog. Your Child or the Dog, Introduction to Animal Rights, available at Amazon.com.